Welcome to The Authentic Life with KL, the podcast where we throw out the rule book, where we dive in head first to the real and raw, unapologetic journey of living the best life. That includes lots of music. This is your go-to space for empowerment, for deep healing and owning your authenticity like the boss that you are. We're here to break down walls and slay self-doubt. Vibe to the soundtrack of your soul. With every beat and lyric, we'll move through stories that heal and empower. You can live your fullest and most badass life. Welcome to The Authentic Life with KL. This episode of The Authentic Life of KL is brought to you by Break the Silence, a nonprofit created using music as a platform to raise awareness for mental health, suicide prevention, and recovery of all kinds, offering hope and starting the hard conversations to bring communities together. Hey guys, it's Kitty, and today I have with me a very special guest, LJR. His name is Luke, in short, and he has a debut album. I'm not going to go into all the album right now because we're going to do that later, but I did run across a video that you made that kind of stopped me in my tracks, and that's the whole, I won't say obsession, that's not good, but my whole like, somebody gets me. You said something along the lines in it, if you've left the church and walked away from your faith, this song might be for you. And it really stopped me because it resonates with me. I didn't necessarily say, hey, you know, that line, I'm turning and walking away. But my belief system and everything that I do now is so different now than when I did, say, 20 years ago. And so I really became very interested in your story. So I appreciate you joining me so very much. And he's going to take us on a journey of all kinds of ups and downs, but a lot of really beautiful things have happened in it. So welcome. Welcome in.
Thanks, Kitty. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here and to connect with you.
Yeah. So I want you to take us kind of on a journey of what I'm going to call the before, because usually there's that moment or that time in your life to where there's the before and there's the after. Do you mind sharing with us your before?
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up in the evangelical church. I went to a mega church from the time I was about five until, well, I guess it technically grew into a mega church. It's one of those, like, you know, church plants that turns into this big thing. It kind of started with like five key families. And my family was, you know, one of those families pretty early on. We weren't one of the very first, but, you know, pretty soon with that. And it grew into this like 3,000 person mega church. And from the time my family was very musical growing up, my dad had a band and he was always doing, you know, worship music and stuff like that. And he was very good at guitar. And he eventually became the worship pastor at the church. And so, of course, we were doing music at the house. My older brother, you know, played guitar, just, you know, learning after dad. And I started to do drums because for me is like, I actually didn't want to learn an instrument. And my thought around the whole thing was like, well, if I have to learn something, let me just pick the easiest thing, which that's gotta be drums because you just hit stuff was my thinking. You know, it's literally just like four arms instead of 10 fingers, way less complex, just hit things. And that seemed doable. And it turned out to work really well for me. I ended up playing drums for the worship services from the time, starting when I was about 10. There was a big service that we had. We had like a yearly celebration thing in like some, you know, park and everything. And I played for that service because the drummer bailed. And so from then on out, I was the emergency call guy, you know, literally, you know, 10 or 11 years old, like learning the songs on the way to the gig. On Sunday mornings, you know, at 6:30 a.m. So, so just inundated with worship music from, you know, when I was pretty little, and eventually, you know, became really sold out for Jesus as I learned more of what it actually, you know, meant to be a believer. I mean, I accepted Christ when I was five, officially, if you want to call it that, because I wanted to take communion. I was like, Mom, why do people get to eat during the service, and why can't I have any? And that was why, is because I you know, I didn't accept the gospel yet at that point. So, you know, I prayed the prayer and then I could eat during church, and that was pretty great. But I feel like I got a better understanding of it, at least of the evangelical version of it, you know, a lot later when, you know, we really started to go more hardcore, you know, trying to share the gospel and stuff like that, dove a lot more into Bible study, both in, you know, prayer groups and Bible studies at church, but also a lot of personal practice at home, because we did the whole Christian homeschooling thing. So we were very much, dedicated to that, not only in, our community within the church, but also like at home. Like I had Bible class and we did all sorts of really intense, reconstruction of the passages where you'd like delve into like, what does it actually say? And we'd study the context and we'd study other, resources and books and stuff. But more than anything, we'd study the actual thing itself. My dad had a degree in theology. So, he knew this stuff and mom and him were really serious about studying this. And so they took all those things that they learned from that and they taught those to us. And that's what we, grew up with was that stuff. And then to combine that with, super like high commitment level to church where we're playing. I mean, Sunday, for example, you get there at 6:30 a.m. You got your practice at 7 a.m. for your 8:15 a.m. service for the early birds, and then 9:15 and then 11:15. So you're playing three services, and then you might go to lunch with some friends, but it's typically still centered around Saul Church friends, and then band practice number one for the Friday night youth group. And then band practice number two for the Sunday night service for the young adults, and then playing for the young adult service that night at 5:30, and then community time after that. And so you're not, I didn't get home until like 9 or 10 p.m. on these nights. So, and that's just Sunday, right? I mean, Monday would be like a band practice, Tuesday would be skit team, Wednesday would be, D team or Bible study. D team was discipleship, team. Thursday would be prayer night or worship night, and Friday night would be outreach. So
So
it
you're
was like,
busy, busy, busy,
yeah.
busy, busy, busy.
So that's the, yeah, exactly. So that's the
Yeah.
kind of picture of like, what that was like. And it was very much focused on the relationship aspect of it, not just like, oh, it's the religion, do all the things right. I mean, there was a heavy emphasis on like, faith without works is dead, right? And like, if you're really serious about pursuing God, your life should reflect that. And it's not just about saying or do, it's not just about saying the right things. It's about making sure your life really does look like that.
Yeah, that's I find a lot of really beautiful things because again, I'm briefly I said or insinuated about leaving the church and things like that. And I find some of the things though, the community part is a huge part. And I know we can have that anywhere, but that is the part that I love the most, like the dinners and the community and just all the energy of having people who are like-minded whenever I was there. It really became consuming and but it was such there was a lot of good times there, though. There's some good
Yeah, and
times.
that is the interesting aspect of it because it's very easy when you have a lot of pain attached to something like that and you leave
Yes.
to want to kind of group it all as like, oh, this is this horrible thing that happened to me
Yeah.
and I wish it never did and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, like during it was actually really wonderful and beautiful. I mean, there were certain moments that were really bad, and I think it set up a really bad sort of structural framework for my life, and I had to undo all this stuff later. But there were a lot of really beautiful things that I really miss about that. And a lot of my music inspiration does come from that. I mean, I don't actively like to say that Hillsong United played a huge role in my musical
Sure.
development just because, I don't want to brand myself as like, worship music. But I know that that's like deeply true as well. So it's Peter Gabriel, Coldplay, and like Hillsong United is really probably the best
I so
combination.
feel
And maybe at some point I'll like, say that
I
more,
feel that I do
but
because I grew up in the Friends Are Friends Forever era, like all the like praise and worship and still I will still sing praise and worship songs because I love them so much and it's the emotion that was evoked with it. I realized after the fact that it was the
yeah.
emotion and the memories and the becoming grounded, like needing that moment with yourself that kind of was the emotion that evoked with me whenever I do play some of those songs. So I appreciate
Yeah.
that so much because they're like, "What? You listen to that?" Yeah, I know that too. Doesn't have to
Yeah.
be all screaming music or whatever. I know a lot of music.
I haven't
So
yet. I actually considered like listening to some of that more now just to see how some of it feels. Because as I've healed over the years, there have been certain ways in which I've been able to return to some of that music or some of those songs or some different aspects of that culture in a way that feels healthier to me, without, throwing all of it away. And it's like it's based on an empowerment thing where like I don't need to submit to any authority in that structure at all. And I viscerally believe that. And so, just because I might enjoy or find value in some aspect doesn't mean that now, like, oh, I have to, like, I'm compelled to believe this unless I can come up with an alternate reason for why not, you know? And that's been really interesting. So I do value a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, even a lot of the things I want to do at my concert are recreate those same type of feelings that, like, we're all coming together into a transcendent moment of something greater where we're all reaching for, like, this idea of the infinite. We all want to grow. We all want to find beauty and goodness and truth, all the fruits of the spirit, right? We want to, like, come together around that. And there's this anthemic longing that comes, that's this feeling in worship music that I just love. And so it's going to be within my songs in a lot of ways, not every single song, but in a lot of them. And there's actually a song that I wrote about maybe 12 years ago called Dreamers that I want to start working on, that I've been really inspired because of the response of people on TikTok to my songs about leaving church. Mm-hmm. It's very much like worship song in the essence of it, but it's not about, you know, a Christian God or anything like that. It's just about this idea of, like, you know, let's actually come together and dream towards the society that we want, you know, and I'll be on that team together. And I want to bring people together, you know, especially people that are, like, on opposite sides of things, because we're just so polarized right now. And it's so difficult to talk to each other. And, you know, music has the ability to cross, you know, cultures and cults, shall we say?
It's true. Cultures, it's a different language. It's a language we all speak, even, yeah. You know.
Like, deeper mythological truths that both people share. And they just live out in different ways, but they struggle to see that the other person is still living that out in their own way, because they can't see past what they believe to be this morally abhorrent approach to life.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting, but I'm grateful for those gifts that I got from there.
Yeah, no, I too. And I love that you talk about the whole bringing people together and things like that. The group that I have now is called, The Authentic Life Collective, but it used to be called Blend Your Spirit, because it's literally, there are so many people with so many different beliefs, and I just refuse to be labeled as the group that only believes this or that, when I feel like it's all somewhere intertwined. And if we were doing what we were taught, whether it was right or not, then we'd be including everybody and loving on everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
that's so funny, because I just made a TikTok about this today, because I saw somebody else that really hit the nail on the head, and I was like, this is something I want to add my voice to. There's a tendency when you leave Christianity to go straight to another form of fundamentalism, right? And to do the exact same thing that you just did as a Christian, where you're like, I know what the truth is, all the rest of you are wrong, and I get to bully you, because I have issues in my own personal life that I haven't resolved, essentially.
It's true.
And people end up doing that a lot, which is, and I'm speaking as somebody that, like, I did that. Like, I can remember specifically, like, screaming at somebody on Facebook about their political beliefs and how, like, they're the reason that X number of people are killing themselves because blah, blah, blah. Like, I was that guy.
Yeah.
And I don't, even if that's true, where is my compassion? Where is the love? Like, where is the person that I want to be? You know, am I going to be just like all these, you know, people that I dislike, that I feel like are not really living out the message of Jesus? Not that I'm, like, a Christian now, but I still want my life to look like the fruits of the spirit. I think we all do.
Yes, I love that. No, I agree. I'm like, it's not, I am not anti-Christian. I'm anti-organized religion. That's madness is what I am. It's like, I believe in treating people and loving people where they're at. And I also believe in showing them ways out, not by telling them or dictating, but by shining a light and allowing them to learn themselves. And, you know, if I can do it, anybody can do it and find their way and heal. And I think that telling someone that you have to do it this way, or the whole anger part, you know, anger is the surface emotion that there's so much under it that you have to, like, these people are angry. They're angry. I was angry. You know, you were angry, but it's a very surface level emotion. There's so much depth there underneath it. So
that's
very true.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's, It can be challenging to let yourself truly feel all of those things. And there's a lot of emotional illiteracy in our world. And I think we are kind of in this place where, because of all the access to resources and the influencers that are talking about this a lot, and a lot of people that have like actual expertise are talking about this, which is great because we need to make sure that those people are still like the people that are, the most listened to. But a lot of influencers make things much more accessible, even though they also, and by they, I mean like we, obviously like we'll get things wrong as we try to share what we've learned and is, that's helped us change our lives. But just the idea of like nervous system regulation and having basic tools to be able to do that, to be aware that like, oh, when somebody says X thing and I get triggered, I have a strong response. My body is going into fight or flight mode. And in this moment, I typically before would not be choosing what happens, right? Because I'm not even aware. It's like just this instinctual response based off of old habits that have been programmed through the experiences that I had growing up that taught me, here's how I make sure I protect myself so I can still be safe, right? And in reality, if to be mature means to be able to see what's happening and to be able to take a step back, kind of separate yourself without, you don't want to shove those emotions down. You want to recognize them. You want to still feel them and give them space to come forth and also still make an intentional choice. So you have to be able to honor yourself and your feelings, not just discarding them or saying that they don't matter or self-betraying, right? By doing whatever you should do just because you should do it, but giving yourself the space to do that. And then also going through like, let me just breathe as I notice my chest gets tight and my
Yes.
stomach like gets like all weird and like all the blood rushes out of, my chest. Not all of it, but like this is one of the things my therapist said. When you go into fight or flight mode, the blood like rushes to your limbs in a lot of ways to prepare you to be able to physically escape. And that's crazy. And it also takes a lot longer to shut down the activation response of your nervous system than to activate it, right? And so you really have to like take some time
That's
to like do
true.
the deep breathing, which literally calms your nervous system. So it's
Yeah, that's
really,
such a
really
good
cool.
point. I haven't thought of that before, but it does because your switch can flip and then your head's spinning around immediately. But honestly, especially if you have like autoimmune or any kind of anything, it can take you days finally to be like, okay, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. But yeah, no, and they don't talk enough about that, and share those things. And I always say our triggers are an open door to a classroom where we are the subject. We can choose
Yes,
to
that's
go
great.
in and like discover, or we can shut it, but don't you worry, it's gonna come back open.
Yeah.
So, we talk a lot about that. In your journey, was there a specific part of your journey that was that moment that made you switch gears and turn and walk the other direction?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely more of a slow iteration away from it, where, there'd be moments where I would think to myself, oh, this seems a little bit not what I expected. And it, kind of those moments kind of slowly built up. I think that's true for a lot of people. And there tends to be kind of that one moment where you kind of decide, okay, this is the straw that broke the camel's back, but it's really like the whole buildup of it, right? And for me, it was in my early 20s. I'd already been starting to kind of doubt a little bit because my visceral experience with Jesus or God had really kind of faded by this point in terms of am I experiencing a lot emotionally during worship, or am I, feeling as convicted, during the sermons, all this kind of stuff. Or even when I would share the gospel with people on the beach, in college, like we did this, I was with Campus Crusade for Christ. And so we would go to Panama City Beach in Florida during spring break, and we'd share the gospel with people who are drunk and partying on the beach. And supposedly we saved like 800 people that week, which I did not convert anybody. I was really bummed about that at the time. But I remember like, feeling as I was going up to those people almost like fake. Like it was like I didn't believe it, but I didn't know why I felt fake because I was like, of course I believe this. So that was a big moment for me of like what's going on here? I didn't know, really what was happening. And because I thought, of course I still believe it's, but it felt like I didn't. And over time, those feelings started to increase. They started to, have some more questions about things. But I figured, there's plenty of moments in the Bible where David is crying out to God, in the psalm saying like, well, my God, why have you forsaken me? Right. And then Jesus says that on the cross. Right. So it's like, it's all over that you're going to go through plenty of dry times where you might not experience God. And so I figured like, I'm just in that type of thing. Right. But it was also really, really difficult because I was going through my own little valley of the shadow of death as my family had some issues that were really coming to light that were kind of making the whole thing fall apart and creating a lot of really huge, pain. And in the breaks that would happen that were happening in those relationships, I was going through a breakup at the time, with a girl that I thought we were probably going to get married. And I was also part of a PhD program at the University of Maryland, College Park, where I was, working on this autonomous robotic bird. And PhD programs in anything are really difficult, but especially in the STEM fields, in engineering, like they are really, really crazy. And the stress that you go through is really bad. And mine wasn't even as bad as like a lot of other people that I knew that, it can drive some really serious, mental health challenges to the point where, you really need to seek help. Otherwise, you might do something that, might make it so you're not around anymore, right?
Wow.
So like that's and that thankfully I was never, pushed to that point. There were just a lot of things that were going on and I was really needing support. I was trying to be more involved in my church as well and trying to like commit harder because obviously like I, God will be there for me if nothing else is, this is I've got to, rely on the foundation of that. And I was just crying out to God, begging for him to be there. And this is not just like in general, this was like in my personal prayer. This was in prayer in groups, Bible studies, stuff like that. Like I wasn't reneging on any of that stuff. Like I stayed in it. And it was years before I felt like I finally got something that seemed like maybe God was going to be showing himself to me in a real way. Because I just needed to know that like God is real, that I could really depend on this. And so there was one of those weird series of coincidences that just felt like it was way too much to not be God. There was this intern that I had at grad school that had almost like these like it wasn't Tourette's in the sense of like speaking, but it was more like body like shakes in some weird way. And he came to me wanting me to take him to a preacher to be healed. And the way that this all happened was just really weird. Like he was walking down the hallway and I was reading my Bible because I was trying really hard to like make sure I'm doing the daily practice of, reading and connecting with God and everything. And I actually felt embarrassed that he would notice that it's a Bible I'm reading and ask me about it. And I was like, oh God, I don't want that. But then the verse came to me that was like, well, if you're ashamed of me before man, then I'll be ashamed of you before my father. And I was like, well, it's time for me to step out in faith. Like I am really feeling desperate here and I need to make sure I need to just do what I know I should do. And I felt convicted by the Holy Spirit in that moment. So I thought, and so I just kept it open. He went to the bathroom and then came back out and asked me about it immediately. And I was like, whoa, okay, this is interesting. Yes, and he was like, you're a Christian, or is that a Bible? Are you a Christian? And I was like, yes, yes. And it's like, do you have a preacher that we could go to? Because I need somebody to pray for my healing. And I'd actually been thinking about like what is the one thing that I would be able to accept or what would I accept as proof of God? And the biggest thing was like somebody being healed. So that was really weird. And like stepping out in faith in that moment, it seemed to line up. So I was like, okay, let's make this happen. So I take him to my pastor, who at this time I'm the young adult worship leader. And so, I've got direct access to him. So we go over to his house and we tell him the situation and like he prays for my intern and he kind of prays that like half-ass prayer, where you're like, God, whatever your will is be done, you're so infinitely complex that, we can't fathom how you might use this in whatever way, but we want it to be for the maximum of your glory, that type of thing in your name, amen. Not really praying for it for the healing. I mean, maybe he said it once at the beginning and then spent the rest of the time being like, well, whatever you want. And like all the people I'd ever heard of having successful healing prayers never had that at the end of it and never spent all their time on that. It was like, we're going to spend 20, 30 minutes like really praying hard with passion and like believing and not doubting, because he who doubts is like a wave tossed by the wind, Book of James, right? So anyway, nothing happened, needless to say, from that. And I was pretty bummed, but I was like, okay, well, maybe this was just not, this wasn't God. And I just, was hoping something would happen. It's not going to happen. But then, like 2 days later, I get invited to this gathering of, it's like a small, kind of college age church, group thing. Just going to hang out with friends. And I meet like four people there who literally were going around at the local college campus praying for people to be healed, and they would get healed, supposedly. Now, to this day, I still believe that they believed that that's what was happening. I don't think they were con men. I don't think any of that stuff. I don't know what was going on there, or if it would. I don't make a decision about that, because what happened after was like basically the most cruel joke that could have possibly happened, in my opinion. So like, I meet these guys, I tell them about, they tell me that they're like, they find out about this thing. Or they, sorry, they, I meet these guys and they tell me that they're going around healing people. However, it came up naturally, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. That I need this. This has got to be ordained, that like this is God doing this work here. So let's get him to you guys, and you guys can heal him. And he's like, well, you don't even need that. Like, we can give the gift of healing to you, and you can go and heal him. And I was like, well, I don't know about that. And maybe that's where I lost faith, and that's why, it ultimately didn't work. Yeah, they imparted the gift of healing to me that night. They like put their hands on me and everything. It was a crazy moment. It all seemed like totally real to me in that moment. Like, it was all really true. And then I brought my intern to them, and we all prayed for him, because I figured, let's just all pray for him. That's gonna be way better. And in that moment, I kept thinking to myself, like, believe and don't doubt, for he who doubts is like a wave tossed by the wind. And I couldn't get all the doubt out of my head, we'll put it that way. I knew that in that moment that, like, if this didn't work, that something in me was gonna break, and I'd have to change how I approached this, because it clearly wasn't real. So, or if it was real, it was like this incredibly cruel joke. And so, of course, we pray for like 20 minutes, all the impassioned stuff, and we're all alternating praying, and I'm trying to push all the doubt out of my head as much as I can. I definitely think I at least had the faith of a mustard seed, at that point. That mountain did not move, shall we say. And after we finished praying, it seemed like maybe he was better, and then he kind of like did his thing again. And in that moment, I just knew, like, I can't keep trying to force this. I have to put truth above God. And I had associated those as the same thing before. And so now I was like, I'm just going to follow truth wherever that leads, and that might not be God, and I've got to be okay with that. So that was really kind of the moment where it felt like it all, it my pre-commitment to this particular worldview fell apart, and I was actually willing to start looking at other things. And then I started reevaluating all sorts of different opinions in scripture about like gay people, or the role of women in church, just all these different things. And eventually just kind of was like, the gospel doesn't make sense to me anymore. It just seems kind of bloodthirsty and weird that it's like all about blood atonement sacrifice. And so, but that was a number of years after that that it kind of all kind of
Just all
unraveled.
kind of
So.
in this, the unbecoming is what we'll call it. I always call all the stuff we've been through, like when you finally decide and you realize, okay, this is not it, the unbecoming happens. And can you talk to me about what emotions that you felt? And I'm sure there was a plethora of them, but I know guilt is sometimes one of the things when people walk away from something and, there's a lot of different emotions. What emotions did you experience?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I did a lot of therapy in my like mid-20s and late 20s, and I realized, and I did a lot of like personal study of trauma, reading The Body Keeps the Score, all sorts of stuff like
Oh,
that.
yeah, that's a good
And I
book.
realized, yeah, amazing, amazing book, life-changing. I wept the second time I read that, during multiple points. And few, I don't, there's very few books that have done that to me, if that might have been like the one. But I realized that in my early high school years, I actually started emotionally dissociating in a lot of ways. And because there were some really painful things that were going on in a romantic relationship at the time. And so I really like stunted my ability to connect with difficult emotions. I mean, I would still feel, you know, some guilt, but I couldn't really access like anger, and I definitely couldn't access sadness or grief. And so when I was leaving, I didn't feel actively guilty. I think mainly because when I left, I expected people to come after me, to try to win me back, to encourage me to, you know, all this stuff. I mean, I dedicated my whole life since I was five, right? And I really expected that they were going to text me a bunch, be like, oh, dude, like, you know, your salvation is at stake, oh, whatever way of loving that they're able to do, right? And I had like two people reach out. And one person, we got together a couple of times, and then they really tried to tell me that I just really had to come back to church because, you know, you can't, you know, no man is an island, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I told them, like, I can't do that right now. It's not the right thing for me. And they then stopped talking to me after that. And then the other person, we just got together once and I tried to initiate, you know, regular, like just some type of continued relationship and got nothing. And I don't think we even talked about anything, you know. I was still very much like pretty much a believer at that time. So, or at least I was, you know, I was on the way out, but I hadn't told them specifically. I just wasn't
Right, you
going
were
to church anymore.
questioning,
Yeah, so I think if people had actively come to try to talk to me about it, to try to convince me to come back, I think I would have experienced a lot more guilt. And in that way, it was a gift that they didn't, because I actually, you know, went on the journey. And but at the time, I think I was mainly just disappointed and really sad and really kind of shocked a little bit too that nobody cared enough to reach out. Like, it's like I didn't matter. It's like I was just kind of thrown away, you know, even though I'd been the golden boy at my church for forever, you know, for as long as I could remember. So that was really hurtful. And a similar type of thing happened at my youth group in college at Campus Crusade for Christ, where, you know, I was vice president and worship leader for the first couple of years, and I took a semester to kind of step back because I had failed my first round of engineering exams in junior year, and I needed to like focus in. And when I finally came back to CRU, like at the end of the semester, all these people that I'd spent the last couple of years with, you know, only one of them said hello to me, really. And they didn't even say like that they missed me or anything like that. There was no like celebratory, oh my God, Luke, it's great to see you. Nothing like that. One person, after I hung out with him for a little bit and we kind of caught up, was like, it's good to see you, man. And that was it. One person. I dedicated so much time and energy to this. I was really shocked. And that really did hurt, you know, a lot. That wasn't why I left. I left because my experience with God wasn't real anymore, you know. But yeah, so
So
there's, and I
that
feel like a lot of those
sounds,
emotions started to come later as I started to let myself actually grieve. Really, over the last like probably 4 years, I've really reconnected with those feelings.
I think the hurt, I mean, all of the emotions, of course, are valid, but the hurt on that is I feel that because it, as you're speaking, I'm remembering all the times that we were at church and they're like, get up and go greet the new people, shake hands, go get
Yeah,
them. But then
totally.
And when you're in it, that's fine because you feel like that's what you're supposed to do. Your family, this is what we do. It's the community. But it shows, how do I say it like appropriately? It shows that everyone, not everybody, but most of the people that you meet in circumstances like this are circumstantial, and you're just friends and know each other because the circumstances push you together. And that's you only get very few connections, you know, that are true, really deep connections, I think, through your life. And I think that there's those of us that was our life and we're connected to everybody. Like I would go after you, don't leave. And we are so guilt, you know, bad about expecting ourselves out of other people. And I think that that creates so much hurt for us, especially coming from religious or church backgrounds, because you put everybody else on a higher pedestal than everyone else because they're there with you or they're in the church. And that means something more, you know.
And like you're talking about this idea of which I this is exactly what we did too, is like you're always going and greeting the new people, making sure that they feel welcome and all that stuff. And what about the people that have been there for forever? You know, what about or the people that are leaders, you know? And I do recognize that there is a phenomenon where like if you're a leader in something, people just assume that you're fine, that you're all great and that you don't have any issues or you don't need the same kind of support or whatever. And to be fair, like I think I did put on a really great image of like being happy all the time. And I worked really hard to, you know, exhibit the fruits of the spirit and all this kind of stuff. And so, you know, maybe people just genuinely, you know, didn't know. But even then, like if somebody leaves, like you would think you'd at least like want to stay friends. It just kind of showed me the quality of the friendship. And over time, as I've learned how to make real friends, now that I've left, it's just so different. It's entirely different from what you get at church because, you know, friendship is made out of mutual respect and love. And, you know, there has to be enough common ground, but you also do want to think differently. You know, you're committed to, you know, understanding what's true. And you also are committed to, you know, supporting each other and reaching out and initiating and, you know, prioritizing time with that person. And, you know, everybody's on their own journey and, you know, not every relationship, you know, can last, you know, throughout your whole life, but, you know, you make your best effort to see where that overlap is and to, you know, see how you can love this person the best that you can. And it just, there was just so little of that truly at church. And I've experienced so much more of that after I left. Way harder to like find friends, especially when you're older, but I have way better friends now than I ever had, you know, at church.
I think it's kind of like the school environment. You know, you go because that's where you're supposed to go, and you go, and there's people around, and you have school friends, but you also have your close friends that are with you, you know, through forever or not, you know, just but for a longer time than what it is of like English in 10th grade. You know, yeah, my friends in English in 10th grade, I remember them, but it's kind of the same thing for me on thinking about that because. It you're just there by circumstances that threw you together, and that doesn't always equate friendship or connection, not for everybody. So,
And yet you kind of like act as if it is somehow this bigger thing. And I do think that there is benefit to having large group community values that allow you to feel a sense of connection with people on a wider scale than you can realistically like connect with. I mean, this is part of the idea of like why nations work, right? Why, you know, groups that are larger than 150, which is like that number of people that you can realistically maintain relationships with, you know, it's why you can establish cooperation within larger groups. And that's a good thing. But I do think there's a we're somehow missing something if we think we genuinely have like deep and meaningful relationships with all of these people, you know, just because we all go to the same church and say we believe the same things and we see each other every week. Oh, sorry, you broke up. Can you say it again?
I said that means we're the same. We're all friends, right? It's
Exactly.
not, it's yeah, I feel that. It's I do think though that there is energy. I'm an energy person. I think there is so much energy and beauty in numbers. And so that was another thing. It's like whether you're believing all the same thing or praying the same thing, if that's what you want to call it. I do think that there is energy within numbers that can be so impactful. And I think that's another beautiful thing about it as well.
I think we really, one of the things that I think is massively missing for people in general, as we recognize all the problems with church and in general as a world kind of seem to be moving away from that, At the same time, there's also seems to be a big movement kind of toward it. So it's like there's kind of two things happening at the same time. But yeah, as
The
we move,
line is darker. The line
yeah,
is
the line
darker.
is definitely a lot darker. But there's just not like a large group community for people who have left, right? So you can't, I mean, you can go to concerts, right? But it's essentially like finding some large, like every community is made up essentially of a story that everybody shares at some way and like some set of community values that are represented in that story, right? And so this is where I think at the core of all of how we live our lives is really like essentially a mythology, right? There's some story and there's some core values that like this is who we are. And the story like says who we are. And we all gather together and do things that are based in that story. That's what worship music is. That's what rock concerts are, right? That's what even like community service events are. That's what spin classes are, right? That's like all of these different things that you can do with a group of people. They're centered on either like a narrative that's big enough that everybody can get on board because everybody shares that to some level, or it's like niche enough that like you and your, 10 friends in this small group community, can kind of all get behind it, but it might not scale because, it's about this like very niche book that you all love, right? But like Star Trek is the same thing. I mean, people can, in a Facebook group, you can all connect around this thing. There's like this shared love. There's these stories. There's the, what that says about who you are. And that's what, church is. And when you kind of lose that, it's hard to recreate that, especially because people who leave church oftentimes are so, we're so directionless because we haven't fit, we just know what we're not, but we don't know what we are. And oftentimes, because you've submitted to an authority for so long, you don't have the internalized power to be able to say and to believe on your own, of your own volition, like, oh, this is what is worth going toward. You're really like looking for somebody else to give that to you. It's like this sort of deferment mentality that you have, and you actually have to be wary of just going to the next cult leader in something else because you can very easily be taken advantage of because you're simply looking for that,
That's
sense
such a
of
good point.
belonging.
No, that's such a good point for anyone who has recently, or long ago, but if you've recently left, you do have to really look at that because you've had someone else making, it's kind of like moving out of your house. You've had somebody else making decisions for you your whole life, and now you're like, well, what am I supposed to do? And I do think that that is such a good point. I haven't really thought about that, but it would be easy to fall into that. I think that the time that you realize you want something different, and then you're trying to look and find it, and then that journey that you have there in between is like the hardest journey, but I also think it's the most rewarding and beautiful journey when you can come out on, a different side of it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it is the journey of self-discovery, and a big part of that is finding your power. It's especially when you come from, and it can be a family. It doesn't have to be like a church environment, but there's plenty of situations where people come, they're so beat up and they're so destroyed and they're so submissive to whatever authority figure that they're vulnerable, right? And the solution is to, and this is one of the things in trauma, like when you experience a traumatic event, part of what's so traumatic is the way that you feel so incredibly vulnerable and powerless. Like that's part of the main problem. And it's one of the biggest things that helps you to heal and to change, to reverse the impact of your nervous system so that when you're experiencing the same trigger again, you're not feeling and just giving into that is to actually have a viscerally opposite experience where you, so that means you have to feel powerful. So you've got to like, but you also like, you don't want to be that person that just because you have power and you can, beat up the other kid in the playground, like that's not the right way to go, right? So like, you got to figure out a way to healthily gain power and to express that so that you believe it, so you can counter this narrative. And you've also got to make sure that you're building real response, competent ability to take responsibility for that power as you grow that. And I think it's really, really hard to do that. And people don't have good training resources on that. And it's also not articulated very much as like a core thing to do. And whenever you've been hurt, typically what you want to do is like find some power, and it's really easy to just find whatever shortcut version you can to get the power. So then you can like feel powerful, but you're not actually taking responsibility competently for that. And then you end up just continuing the cycle because you're just going to hurt other people if you don't learn how to competently take responsibility for the power that you're acquiring. I do think there's like a limit to how much power you can acquire and be responsible for. You know, like if you're, I don't know, if you're the president of a country or like of some like massive large group, there are certain limits where like you can only do so much. Even if you're super crazy competent, you can't do everything perfectly, right? And so I think there are limits to like, it's almost like a moral limit on how much power you can really like obtain without becoming the villain of somebody else's story.
There are those people, and I think when you become self-aware and things like that, I find it very uncomfortable to be around those people. I don't know if it's because like I read energy or if it's like they just make me so uncomfortable because they're expecting a certain response from me and they are not going to get the response that they want from me. But you can see it and you can see that there's hurt people and they are flocking that direction. And I think my spot on showing up for people has been, here, I'm vulnerable. I'm going to show you all the things that I've completely effed up and like how I was destroyed from my brother dying and all these different things. And I'm just going to take you with me and show you like what it looks like actively. I think so many people learn from seeing people vulnerable, but that's the scariest place in the world for me to be. So, vulnerability is, we talk about it so much on the podcast and just in the group. I think there's a real beauty on it. And if you're strong enough to be vulnerable, and that sounds like counter, like they're not the same, but I do think that they are the same.
I mean, vulnerability is really powerful. It's also interesting because it can very easily be manipulated, right? Like you can use that to manipulate a group, right? So like just because you're vulnerable doesn't mean that you are the person that should now, or because you've been hurt in a vulnerable place, doesn't mean that now you are the person who should be given the most power and make and being the person who's making decisions, right? That doesn't, correlate. Now you have a very valuable viewpoint that needs to be heard. We need to make sure we don't hurt people, right? But it doesn't mean that you, just because you're a victim and you've been hurt a lot, that you have that competency to be able to take responsibility for this power that you're assuming. And that's one of the things I think is really challenging about the world that we're in, because we have so much hurt and so much pain, which is finally really being heard and it needs to be heard. But at the same time, how are we vetting to make sure that the people that are saying, I've been hurt so much, so therefore let me decide what we're doing differently, like that a lot of time it doesn't seem like these people are the people that are most competent to be able to make those decisions. It's like the idea of, let's say that somebody, really has been hurt by one of the, systems of oppression that we have in our world, right? And in our country specifically. Well, if that person then thinks, well, I've got great ways of like fixing this, but they don't even take care of their basic stuff in their own life. They struggle to grocery shop, they struggle to, make their bed in the morning. They don't have anything organized in their own. There's no legitimacy behind their claim of like why should we believe that this person has something that's going to be, a good way to go. Doesn't mean that they're wrong, but I think, it would be a lot easier to trust or believe that something legitimate is coming out of this person's opinion, if they are showing that they are capable of taking on that responsibility, seriously. Otherwise, it can feel like a cheap power grab, and that doesn't help anybody, not even them.
No, that's thought-provoking just on its self. On its own, because when you start thinking about that, you're like, oh, you're right. There's people who are vulnerable because this is what's happened. And so now I'm going to get all the people that's had this happen and I'm going to pull you in. And yeah, it's just wild.
And
It's
it's
wild.
yeah and I think this is the interesting thing about it. Like it's I don't think it's I would be very surprised if it is really ever, I mean maybe rarely, but I would think that it's rarely if ever done with any sort of like conscious intention,
Yeah,
right? It's
I
not
agree.
something where like somebody is trying to like make it be that way. It's just the dynamic that ends up happening.
Yeah.
And this is why I think like really focusing on being competent in observing your own behavior and being able to kind of, so you're separating, right? You're acting as that observer and you're fully in the experience. And it's kind of this dichotomy, thing, being able to competently do that and to be able to choose how you're reacting and like project forward into your life to say, where do I want to be? And then do my daily practices match that now? Like all those things, make a huge difference. 'Cause I mean, it's just like, and this is one of the things I think is so interesting. I keep coming back to different verses that really I get to like sort of reinterpret now that I'm gone. And just because I see an interesting parallel to real life doesn't mean I like accept that the Bible is like
Sure.
true with the word of God or whatever. But it's like examine the speck, examine the log in your own eye before you try to remove the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye. It's like it's very easy to become the evil that you hate. And the path is like you're not going to see it a lot of time if you're when you're on it. That's why we are supposed to be humble. That's why you need a community. So it's like it's really interesting.
It is that reminds me of there is this really great book we did in our community, and it's called It Didn't Start With You. And it talks about how the things you focus on the most on, and typically as growing up, that would be like your parents or whoever hurt you, that those are the people you become the most like when that's what you focus on the most, And so that reminds me of that. And I've seen that experience in my family too. And it's like, you try so hard. I don't want to be like you, and have that internal dialogue because you're, I call it your little or whoever, but like you're sitting out here and you're recognizing this is a trigger. This is a trigger, and there's a lot of like I've apologized to my kids, and different things like that, trying to understand like why do we act the way that we do and our responses. So I very much connect with that.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, it made me think of another way in which I think the mythology that's there in the Bible that, again, I don't see it as like a literally true thing or anything like that, but there it brought yet another verse to my mind. I mean, you talk if you look this if you think about Paul in the New Testament, right? He talks about this idea of like what I want to do, I don't do, what I do, I don't want to do, like, and this idea of like the sin of the flesh, the flesh is like got its own thing it wants to do. There's like it's like this visceral sort of thing that's going on inside of our bodies. And then there's like the us that's trying to choose, but you've got sort of this, sinful nature, shall we call it. And so if you and if you remove, this is where I think it gets hard for a lot of people. And for me, it was really hard for a long time to really even think of the word God or any of the ideas in the Bible without all this baggage. And so I don't want to push anybody who's listening to this, like to appreciate this. But for me, it helped me a lot as I was healing to start to be able to reinterpret some of these, things. Like the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. It's like maybe that actually describes my nervous system is like an overdrive, it's hyper vigilant, trying to predict all this stuff, and it's reacting and controlling. And that's it's weak because in my mind, my spirit wants to do the right thing. It wants to be choosing and all this stuff, but my flesh is just unwilling to let that happen, right? And so maybe that's this mythological story that's telling that. And that is like awesome.
No,
But as soon
it
as you
is
tie it into all
amazing.
the other stuff, it like you lose all that value. And it's like, oh.
No, and it's our subconscious is kind of like I feel like it's kind of the controlling mechanism so many times on it's we're just in robot mode. And then when you're like, wait, okay, your subconscious is literally just trying to protect you. It's your biggest protector and your biggest like wall you have to like push through to go anywhere because all it's trying to do is protect you. But it is fierce. So fierce, right? It's everything.
Yeah, it'll just take you
So
over. I mean, like,
it does.
I mean, the what literally happens. I think I learned this from The Body Keeps the Score. I forget, but like the specifics of your body is that you go into fight or flight mode. Your body starts to dump cortisol and adrenaline into your bloodstream, which these chemicals create this stress response. The blood flow goes away from your prefrontal cortex, just like it goes into your limbs to prepare you for, physically escaping. But your prefrontal cortex is the rational processing center of the brain. So literally, your ability to think clearly literally is being decreased because you're not getting the blood flow that you need to that area. It's all going elsewhere to protect you. And so you're so screwed, And so literally that's what's happening. And so the sooner that you can leverage a tool like deep breathing to calm your system down and to, regulate your nervous system again, you'll start to get more blood flow back, and then you can choose sooner. And so the more you practice that, the more you're able to get out of that loop.
Yeah, that's we talk a lot about. I can't remember the exact name of it, but I call it's the filter. Is it the EAS filter back there in the back of your head that it basically filters out everything that is important to you? So you have to train your mind to find things over and over before it becomes something that just becomes second nature.
Yeah,
It's
kind of like seeing a car on the
yeah,
street. Like once you get a car, then you see that car everywhere, but
yeah,
you never saw it before then. It's like the things
exactly.
that you look for, they're all there. It's just what are you training your mind for?
Yes, very much. That's I like, the slug bug game. It's like you don't ever see them until you're like needing to see a slug bug, and then you see them all the time. So it's anything you're looking for, that's what you see. And so it just takes so much to it is harder work to heal and try and maneuver and grow as a person than it is just to stay. It's far more rewarding, but it is hard work if anybody thinks it's not hard work.
And I think that's the fundamental of what life is about, is constantly growing. I mean, if you look at the cycle of anything in nature, right? It's birth, it's development, it's coming to a place of maturity, and then over time, you kind of cycle back, right? You go back and you end up dying at the end of life. And so if you're not growing, if you're not going through that process, I think there's a deep disconnect that's happening that is going to make it really difficult to experience the fullness of what our life is supposed to be. So you got to be willing to go through that and always embrace that. And if you don't, I think a lot what happens is that life forces you to through the crises that always kind of come up. So I think this happens. This happens. I first noticed this looking at my own experience when it came to like specific theological beliefs, where essentially, if you don't change anything for a long enough time, you get a certain amount of life experiences that tell you, oh, how I thought about this was clearly wrong, but you're not willing to believe it yet. And so eventually you hit a point of crisis where you can't deny these experiences anymore. And so then that causes you to change all your beliefs, or at least subset of that beliefs, but that throws your identity into crisis because you put your identity into a set of beliefs. And this cycles because now you feel secure again. You're like, okay, I'm all good. Now I know the truth this time. And then people oftentimes just keep doing that because they want to feel safe in the moment. They want to feel safe right now. And so if I can just feel like I know what this is, I don't have to rethink it. I definitely don't have to do that very often or iterate on it. I can feel safe and secure. And that also allows you to keep your nervous system regulated. But you go through all these crises and you also are not training yourself to be open to what is true if you are wrong about things. And so I think this really reinforces like closed-mindedness. And I think a much better way to approach life is to put your identity instead in a process where you are, your core sense of like who you are is I'm somebody who's always going to learn. I'm always going to grow. I'm going to do my best to unlearn things when I realize that they're not true. I'm going to do my best to learn new things when I, see new information. And I'm going to be a good steward of that, where I'm going to filter that information well. I'm always going to learn how to filter that information better. And then the process literally will iterate on itself too, because the process is a thing that you're doing, and new information should come in that should help you improve that process over time as well. And so you assume that you don't know everything. You assume that your process is not perfect, and you should always iterate on that. And that keeps you in a constant state of humility, which allows you to continue to grow. It's less like you're on this super solid footing because you're not putting your identity as much in like a sense of knowing, which is ironically, I really think more the way that like God calls Christians to be, where like if the whole idea is that God is infinite and you're supposed to be like God, like you don't actually know what that looks like perfectly. And so you should always be orienting yourself in humility to grow into the character of God. And you can't perfectly know what that looks like in a situation. So,
and then that circles back around, I think, to I'd say trauma or whatever we've been through, because control and knowing what's happening keeps us feeling safe. And so it's like, you know, stepping outside of feeling safe and not knowing what's going to happen, there's some real beauty within that growth, and there's lots of it out there.
Yeah.
If you're open to it. So,
and like, you know, I would call that stepping out in faith. Right.
Yeah. Step out of your box. Lift the leg.
Yeah.
Step out of the box. It's okay. How did the music that you're writing now, how has it impacted from your journey?
Yeah. So the album is interesting. What I'm doing right now is a little bit different. So I'll kind of talk about the album, and then I'll talk about what I'm doing right now. I think there's a little bit of separation there. It'll be helpful to try to communicate it. So the album contains songs that I've written over the last 15 years of my life. So, you know, the opening track, I Can't Say, I wrote that when I was 19.
Are you when the sky began to fall? Is that the album we're talking about? Okay.
Yep. And so, you know, the track that's been doing pretty well on TikTok right now is When the Sky Began to Fall. Child in the Dark also has gotten some good traction through just a not really related to like my story post, but it did well. I went on the whole Group 7
Those
trend.
Those are literally the two songs I picked to talk about.
Awesome. Those are two of my
favorites.
They really
spoke to me. Yeah, they spoke to me a lot. So that's...
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, the album has songs about my loss of faith. And a lot of those are like grieving that loss and processing that loss. And then there's also a lot of songs about like codependent, toxic, romantic relationships. And so it's kind of like both of those things. And I do think there's a lot of parallels between a relationship with God inside the evangelical community and codependent relationships, unfortunately, oftentimes even abusive relationships, depending on what your experience is like, you know, in church. But oftentimes I think there's just massive parallels there that are really unfortunate and very sad, but also very real. But yeah, the tracks kind of span that whole thing. And so it kind of documents in a lot of ways the last, like, you know, 10 years, well, I guess now 15 years of my life, and everything from, you know, with I Can't Say, that was the first track that I wrote out of all those songs, but it's also kind of this like foreshadowing track, right? Because I wrote that after my first year of college, where I wanted to have some song to be able to essentially like tell my friends like, hey, I don't know how it's going to work out, but it's going to be okay. Cause I could see all this pain and, you know, that people are going through. And I wanted to give them a sense of hope and belief that like, I don't know what's going to happen or how things are going to turn out. But like, if you just believe, you don't have to believe in like my God or whatever, you know, it wasn't like that. It wasn't a Christian song, but I just knew like, just keep going and somehow things will turn out okay. And even though your life is falling apart, and then my life proceeded to fall apart over the next, you know, 10 years. With the loss of all that stuff. And so I really kind of foreshadowed my own life. And as my life came back together, I really started to kind of see that song in a different light too, because it really spoke to me from my own story, you know? And so that's one of my things, one of the things I just love about music and songs is that, you know, your experience and what a song means to you is not just what's the intention of the person that wrote it, right? It's the unique collision. And this is what I think really all art is, like the core essence of art, is it's the unique collision of the statement piece, which could be a song or a painting or whatever, and then the infinitely unique experience that the person who's experiencing that statement piece brings to it. And the collision of those things, what happens in that person's mind and their visceral body experience as they, you know, see your art and bring their experiences to it, like that is the art. And that is like, you get to do that with your own stuff too. Like I had that experience with that song, with other songs in my album. And it really, it's brought up a lot of, you know, deep emotion, and it feels very meaningful to do that. So anyway, so that song kind of starts everything off.
Wonderfully then, put, by the way, that's wonderfully put. It paints a beautiful picture. It's very
thank
true.
You.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to be able to do at shows. And so I try to keep that in mind, you know, at shows, like how can I create something that's going to be compelling, that's going to give people something strong enough that compels them, it gives them this strong emotional experience, and also kind of gives them a statement to which they can then react in some way that hopefully, and that statement is some aspect of my story, right? So something that's so emotionally compelling about my story that allows that person to almost like assume the truth of my story to help them move past whatever has happened in their past, right? But without any sort of like, I don't want to like compel them or like force them or threaten them with hell or whatever. You know, it's like none of that type of thing. So the album kind of starts off with that and then goes like my life did into all these romantic relationships that were difficult and kind of dominated a lot of things. And then eventually comes back to this loss of faith, you know, and the way that that impacted me. And there's even ways in which I think songs that I didn't actively consciously write about that are still like, if I see them through the lens of that, they clearly have this aspect to it. Like even In My City, right? Which I did not write about my loss of faith. I wrote that because I was trying to make that like a song that's about like what would be a really good gritty superhero TV show like opener track, like for the Punisher or something like that. That's how I wrote it. But you look at it and you look at some of the words and it's like it really gets at a lot of like the anger that I could not connect with and the way that I felt. And it's just really interesting to like go back and listen to that, those words within the lens of discovering all these feelings that I had about, you know, leaving church and the way that I was treated or the way that people interacted with me. And then as you go more into the album later, like with tracks like, you know, Still Need Someone, Save, When the Sky Began to Fall, and Home and Child in the Dark, you know, those are much more like the grieving process. You know, like Still Need Someone is this, you know, kind of big, expansive song of like, you know, I'm just in this huge hole. I don't know how I'm ever going to get out of this. And it's dark in here. But, you know, at least I'm not where I was, but I don't know where to go. And like, I still need someone. I still want, you know, to be able to believe, but I can't anymore. So, and then, it kind of, the album really does walk through kind of the stages of grief in that sense. And that wasn't even like intentional. It's just when I figured what's the order of the songs I feel like it should be, I wrote those out. And then I discovered this goes through the stages of grief in like the weirdest possible way.
I agree. I mean, I did listen. Now I will tell you, I find myself definitely When the Sky Began to Fall and then Child in the Dark. Those are the two I always go back to because to me, I think that When the Sky Began to Fall, when you talk about worship music, I love how it has like that blend in there. And it doesn't feel inauthentic. It feels very authentic, singing along with it or listening to it. I sent it to my husband. He actually plays music at a recovery church, which is very interesting, you know, for me. So he does that, and I sent it to him, and he was like, "Oh, listen to how he does his voice in there." And he was kind of listening to it, you know, because we share, you know, praise and worship songs and stuff like that. Because we met in the youth group, so we experienced it together. And you know, he goes there and he does the music there, and he really appreciated that as well,
Oh, it's
because it
amazing.
does give you that. So you, it it's you know. For people who have their journey and you know you were within the church and things like that, you going on the journey that you've been in are going to reach so many more people because of the journey of leaving, so to speak, and bringing them to what I would say is the light or themselves or finding something because you know because you went through that and exited. You wouldn't be here, you know, if you didn't experience that. So I love that you are open enough to share your story because it's so needed, and people will see that mirror reflection, you know, within you of themselves, and they'll come to that. So it comes across as very authentic when you're listening to the music. So,
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
yeah.
It's been interesting hearing the responses to those songs. I think I might have mentioned it earlier that like at least I've been saying it over the last couple of days that when I put out the album, I kind of assumed that like those songs wouldn't go anywhere. I figure like no one wants to hear these songs. They're going to be like, they're going to love the upbeat pop and like more rocky stuff at the beginning. That's more like mainstream accessible. And the stuff that's really connected with people has very much been those songs. And that's not that the other songs are not, you know, true to me or whatever, but there is like, that was such the foundation of my life for so long that like, there's this core part of who I am that just feels tied, you know, to that. And seeing the responses, you know, like what you said, that was just so beautiful. And, you know, it means a lot to me to hear that, because that's like, those are the songs where like, I was really, I mean, I got really emotional during the studio sessions for those songs as I'm like singing these words. You know, I get emotional now just thinking back to those moments. Yeah. And I've been feeling more like, more, I guess, more accepting of what I feel like is kind of my, not to, I mean, it's weird to use the word like calling or whatever, but when I look at what do I want to create for people in these experiences at concerts, in a lot of ways, I want to recreate that sense of connection to something greater, you know, like what we talked about earlier, almost like, this is not the phrasing I want to use, but it's like worship music for people who don't worship anymore, you know, type of thing. But like that to me seems like it, this is something I'm kind of called into in a way. Yeah. And it seems to be a big lack, you know, where people need something like that, where they can be called into something bigger than them, than themselves, but it's not this like rigid, specific, you know, Christian deity thing, but they can find that same commonality and community. And it can, you know, cross the lines that we have, you know, politically, you know, all the challenges that people are facing right now, and hopefully bring people together and see our common humanity. And it seems like people really want that, which I was really surprised by, you know, because I did not think that when this guy, like, that was my last choice of song to try to promote, you know, on TikTok.
No, it's in a, the world's in a place now to where due to, the religious rules or boundaries, I guess, because I always say religion makes God small, that if God is God, then you're literally putting him in a box, is my opinion. Like, if, you know, but it's interesting in the fact that, like I have the community that I have, and there's leaders within the group. And one of the women in the group is ordained, and she really is called to, or thinks her purpose is to, travel and do baptisms for people who aren't religious, but it mean the, you know, the losing your old self and healing into the new, you know, your new self. And so I love the fact that you're talking about like the music experience and that, because there is people out there that's literally what they want. They want the experience without the confines of what is man-made. And so it's definitely out there, and there's so many people that are like, yeah, that's exactly what I need. So it's needed. You're so needed.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's weird to think about, because, and it almost makes it more pointed when you talk about the idea of somebody like going around doing baptisms, but like, you know, essentially changing the interpretation of how you see this ritual. Right. And retaking ownership over it, where you're deciding this is what it means, and that's like a statement of empowerment, right? And then you're taking an action with that, and you're also connecting your old story with your choices now in a way that integrates it, as opposed to rejecting it. And that creates so much of this cohesive meaning. Or it creates a cohesive story, which allows you to experience meaning more. Like the way I look at meaning, which I think we all want to experience meaning in our lives, I think meaning comes from, if you think about the most meaningful moments you've ever experienced, it comes from, in my opinion, it comes from the moments. I'll start this over so I can have it and as one cohesive thought here. But if you think about where meaning comes from, it comes from the moments where you experience the most resolution in a painful story in your life. So, you know, if it's, and we all have these kind of built in to our lives from the get-go, right? Whatever core traumas we experience that kind of dictate how we react to the world and program our nervous systems and all that stuff. you got some difficult relationship with your dad or your sister or your mom, or you're with God or with a person at youth group or whatever it is, a pastor, all these different, experiences that kind of create and set up these painful stories in your life that you eventually want to resolve. But the longer that those stories are left unresolved, and the more pain, the deeper the pain that's in that story, and then especially if you're experiencing re-injury over time, the more resolution you're going to get in that moment where you are able to kind of move on. And I think it's that resolution in that moment where you are now able to move on, where you experience the sense of like meaning. And so in that sense, I think this is why meaning is tied to suffering. Because if you want to experience meaning, you have to have these painful stories you've lived through. And the more pain, the more meaning, right? And so this is where it's like this choice of, do you want to have like an easy life that means nothing, or do you want to go through the fullness of life, and that means embracing, to an extent, all of this pain. I do think there's extreme pain that seems completely unnecessary, that is hard to like see the benefit of. I mean, obviously things come to mind like the Holocaust or any sort of, genocide or school shootings or, children that have like the parasites in the back of their eyes and like eat the eyes out, all this kind of stuff that like this is all like real stuff. There's a limit to that, I think. But even then, it seems like there are some people that somehow seem to be able to still find a sense of gratefulness for their life, even in the face of going through cancer or losing people to cancer. And I can't understand that, because I've not been through that, but it seems like that's real for people. And so if you're trying to experience meaning, identifying what those stories are in your life and trying to find ways to resolve them, I think helps you move in that direction. And once you, resolve enough of those, then I think you can start to introduce new choices that kind of create some level of suffering in your own life, that you're voluntarily taking on some level of pain. This could be like, I don't know, you want to get a house, right? Or you want to get in shape. And so you make this commitment to go to the gym and go through all the suffering in order to get to this goal. And then you feel the meaningful moment of resolution of like, I worked really hard for 5 months or 2 years or whatever it is, and now look where I've got to, that type of thing. And so bringing that back to what we were talking about, when you're experiencing something where this is part of why I think it's so difficult for people who leave church to feel a sense of meaning again, because you lose so much of your story and you can't seem to integrate it into something else. And so you have to create enough of a story, and then from here with something new somehow, and then somehow connect your old story to that. And it's very difficult to do without valuing where you came from. And valuing can feel like agreeing or supporting or all this other kind of stuff. And that can feel like a self-betrayal. And so it's really difficult to do that well. But I think that is like so important to find ways to do that. And that's where, things like this baptism, or being able to, for me, like when I'm on stage and I'm teaching people a song that, helps to try to call them into who we were all meant to be, and into a place of growth and transcendence where we're all unifying together and singing with one voice, just like we used to sing, together at church. It's like that's or reinterpreting some of those verses, like all those help me to really bring that story together and to value all of the things that I learned from that, instead of just throwing everything away. And then I can experience meaning, deep meaning, in those moments
Absolutely.
where I feel
Absolutely.
like I'm living out who I'm supposed to be and giving to other people. And so I think that's a way that, your friend is doing something beautiful for people to help them experience that. And that's what I want to be able to do with
Yeah,
my
that's our
songs as
dream.
well.
That's our dream to do. We want, with our community, we want to have a bus and travel and
That's awesome.
do things. We want to impact the community. But I'm very big on, I just want to be the catalyst for people to be able to tell their story, because I think healing starts when you integrate and say out loud, like, this is my story. And she's one of the leaders within it, and that's what she was like, I just really, I'm called to do that. And I'm like, do it. She's all kinds of reasons why she can't, but that's her calling and that's what she wants to do. And so we're gonna try to somewhere along the line get that, help her with that. So it's needed and it's expansive when you can. It's expansive for everybody, you know, to be able to see the power that you have, and when you can start healing and start understanding yourself and helping other people, it helps everybody. It makes the world a better place. And let's be real, it's not a very good place right now. So, you know, so we make it. We make it a good place, and there needs to be more of that. So,
Yeah, totally.
yeah. Well, I appreciate you so much. What do you have coming up or anything coming up that you want to tell us about?
Yeah, so this next year, the situation with music is basically trying to do a lot of collaborations. So some of that's original songs I'm writing with people. Some of that is, doing a lot of covers. I've got about, six or seven covers that I've put together, done most of the arranging and recording for. And so those are moving on to the mixing stage. I've got a new one coming out on December 19th. It's Coldplay's Yellow. I'm really excited about that. And then I have a lot more original songs that are coming out over this next year. And these are going to be about a variety of things. There's some things that are, still about codependent relationships. There's one that's about, my marriage, about my wife. Never, it's wonderful to have a song like that now. There's going to be some that are also, about that loss of faith. I mean, I found myself writing one of those in the forest the other day. And so that was kind of crazy just to have that come up. It was like on a hike with my wife, and it just like kind of started coming to me. And so these are going to be kind of, spaced out throughout the year, but the goal is at least one new song every month. And obviously, posting a lot on TikTok and, trying to share more of my story and other things I've found that are, meaningful to me, that have been helpful to me on my TikTok as well, and then tying that into the music. And that's been interesting. It's challenging to find a way to do that well, that also resonates, with people. But it's and then especially I think it's interesting to try to promote covers on TikTok or anything like that, because as soon as you kind of create sort of a niche of like, this is who you are, it seems like content outside of that tends to not do so
It's really
great.
hard. Yeah.
But I'm really trying to focus more on just being who I really am and not worry as much about the algorithm, because it does tend to favor that. So sometimes I just wonder, with whatever new thing, I just need to figure out how to kind of position that, or to kind of attach my story to it,
Do you ever
to, if
go
that makes
live
sense.
on TikTok? Because you can go live and play music, and that tends to pull people over.
Yeah, I just started going live on TikTok over the
Okay.
last, I don't know, month. I'm not
Okay.
consistent with it yet. But that is something I would like to try to do more.
Okay.
And I also want to do like a solo tour over the next, year if I can.
Nice.
I'd love to do a full band tour. If I go viral on TikTok and build out a whole thing, I'll totally take my band on tour. We've got a fully built out show with like synced up lights. I built a whole like projector thing that's, automated and connected to the audio and visuals that represent everything. And like, it's a lot of fun, and I'd love to do it. So hopefully
Okay,
that'll
well,
happen.
I'll keep an eye on too when you go live. I always teach on Monday nights, and then for the rest of the time, I'm just kind of doing different stuff. But I'll keep an eye on that because I would love to see you live on there too.
Awesome.
So I'm gonna end the podcast with this for someone who's listening. That may be in that in-between space of questioning things. They're not yet who they're becoming. What is some words of wisdom you would give them?
Oh man. I feel like it's so specific to each person.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, the core thing I would say is learn to trust yourself, to build a sense of intuition, and to lean on that, and to not be afraid if when things get a little bit messy, and to try to, build your own sense of personal power. Learn to regulate your nervous system, and try to also observe yourself during that time, and try to build a sense of, awareness for how you're using your power, and try to figure out what does it mean to competently take responsibility for that. I think those are the biggest things. And then just never give up. Like, life will get better. No matter how dark this moment feels right now, with the loss of identity, and loss of all direction and feeling of meaning and purpose, those things, you know, they can return. And it feels like they never will, but, you know,